This is the time set for oral argument by the en banc court in the case of Patty Benson versus State Engineer et al., number 65833. Thank you, counsel, for delaying the argument so we could put these together back to back. Are you ready to proceed, Ms. Schroeder?
Yes, thank you. May it please the court. This appeal concerns the judiciability of the court, specifically the requirement to exhaust administrative remedies and the application of the ripeness doctrine and its exception, futility, as it applies to a cancellation of a water right under ORS 533395. When taken at its core, the state's argument is that Patty Benson should have either waited 2 more days to file her petition for judicial review in order to place herself squarely within the Engelman case, 98 Nevada 348, or two, alternatively petition the state engineer for a hearing under 533.395 section 2. That hearing may or may not have been granted because the statute is a may. And if it was granted, it only would have allowed the state engineer to take evidence on the due diligence of Patty Benson, not on her circumstances. Then, based upon that record, the hearing record would have allowed the state engineer only three options, the three options the district court had. One, to affirm the cancellation. Two, to modify the cancellation. Or three, to rescind the cancellation.
Counsel, before you get into that argument, just a basic question sitting there. I'm looking at the order from the court, and I'm querying, do we have a jurisdictional issue to begin with? Is Ms. Benson suing in her own individual name, or is she suing as the trustee?
The property was transferred to Ms. Benson following the trust dissolution after her mother passed away. So she's suing in her individual.
Was that notice provided to the state engineer? I know there was a quick claim deed as to the property only, so that's why I query.
Yes. Your question has to do with the title transfer applications for the state engineer. And when this original water right was issued, it was issued and then the Benson family trust, the father's trust, had it. Then it was transferred and under the control of the mother. The father passed away, then it went to the mother. And then the mother's trust was in place for that water right. And then when she passed away and the estate was administered, then it went to Patty. So this whole process would require the state engineer's title transfer process to go forward. And we aren't arguing about the notice that went to the family because that would have involved the title. So at best, the outcome of such hearing under 533.395 was a foregone conclusion. It was mandated by Section 3 of that statute, which says the effective date of the appropriation under the permit is vacated and replaced by the date of filing of the written petition with the state engineer. And at worst, the statute would have required the state engineer to look at his order 1226, designating and closing the Diamond Valley Basin to affirm the cancellation. Just those two choices, just those two foregone conclusions. Arguably, simply by filing a petition for hearing with a state engineer under 533.395, Patty Benson's fate was sealed, at best losing her priority date, a fate that meant no more groundwater under the permitted use for her ranch. The state argues that this case only involves a foregone conclusion for only one issue. But it fails to explain that this one issue results in losing her water right, a right that was originally issued in 1960. The district court's error in finding that the futility exception to exhaustion does not apply is well researched and written in its opinion, perhaps too well, as it included cases beyond the application of Nevada law and this court's Eagleman decision to find that Patty Benson's petition should be dismissed. The district court's decision restated the policy behind the exhaustion doctrine, which policy has stated we do not accept to, we accept to its application. That policy contained five policy provisions. One, to ensure against premature interruption of the administrative process. Two, to allow the agency to develop facts. Three, to utilize the agency's expertise. Four, to provide for efficiency. And five, to ensure individuals don't ignore the administrative process and run to the court. Nevertheless, the district court's decision failed to discuss in its decision the policy considerations beyond just stating them or even applying them to Patty Benson, probably because none of those policies apply to the exhaustion necessary to apply in this case. Number one, interruption. There was no administrative process available except maybe a hearing. The hearing under the statute is discretionary and provides the same three options that the court had: affirm, modify, or rescind. Developing a factual record. As I stated, the only facts that the state engineer could hear were about due diligence. There would be no question that Patty Benson didn't file an extension or that the well wasn't drilled. Those facts under three don't require an agency expertise or the expertise of the state engineer.
But it might provide reasons why there was a lack of due diligence.
That, yes, none of those, and that's
why
correct.
Wouldn't the state engineer be able to inquire into that? And why wouldn't Ms. Benson be in a position to offer explanations in that regard?
She could. There is no question that she could have had a hearing and offered those explanations. Whether the state engineer would have allowed that testimony or not is questionable because he does not have equity jurisdiction. So the reasons for her making those excuses were not ones that he could consider under the statute.
But if he had made findings that indicated that she had exercised due diligence, so there might have been excusable neglect for the delay in responding to the last cancellation notice, that might have provided a factual record on which the district court might have been able to review it after the decision had been made by the state engineer, correct?
That's correct. But the excusable neglect in this case had nothing to do with due diligence, which was the only standard the state engineer had. So the neglect was that her mother and father had passed away and she was resolving the estate and didn't get notice. Those are not the kinds of due diligence questions that the state engineer has in his power to act upon.
The absence of receipt of notice isn't within the context of a due diligence finding?
Well, it is, Justice Hardesty, but the problem is that the receipt of notice wasn't an issue here because the receipt of notice did go to the family trust. It did not go to Patty Benson because during the time that these notices were sent, the mother had passed away and the probate had started and the conclusion of the trust and transfer of the property to Patty had occurred. So there was no argument, I don't think, that Patty Benson could make that she didn't receive notice.
Or at least that the trust hadn't received
exactly
notice.
The trust. Thank you for that correction. Another policy reason that the district court cited but did not...
That issue is an absence of facts on the critical question of whether notice was provided or not or affects due diligence. That doesn't affect the state engineer's ability to evaluate due diligence. mean, if the facts aren't there, the facts aren't there, but that doesn't adjust or alter the factor.
Correct. We could have had a hearing, and he could have, he may have given a hearing or may not have. If he gave a hearing under the discretionary provision, may, that hearing would have been about due diligence, and I believe that there was no question there was no due diligence in terms of developing the water use. Because what had to happen was an extension request for due diligence had to have been filed. It was obvious it was not filed. It doesn't take a lot of expertise.
I guess what I'm struggling with is that if there aren't facts that provide a basis for excusing the response to the admittedly received notice, then what equity can the district court provide in a direct filed petition for judicial review? Aren't you just trying to circumvent the consequences of subparagraph 3, which is a state statute?
That is a state statute, and it requires that petition to be filed under an exhaustion of remedies. The exception to that, of course, is futility. We argue that it's futile because the state engineer's ability to decide in that hearing, if he gave one, was simply whether or not due diligence existed. He could not consider the fact that the father and mother had passed away and this whole operation was occurring inside of probate. See, that was beyond his jurisdiction, and so it would have been futile to have that hearing. Only the court could give an equitable remedy and hear equitable evidence.
What would be the basis for the district court providing that equitable remedy in the face of a statute that required that the priority be relegated to the date of the filing of an administrative request?
In the case Engelman, the court found that it was futile to have that hearing, that it could have, that the court did have equity jurisdiction, which the state engineer did not, and could go forward with the priority date as it was.
Mr. Snyder.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Jerry Snyder for the state engineer.
What relief could the state engineer have given to Ms. Benson if she had filed an administrative application with the state engineer?
Is your question what relief could have or would have?
Could have.
He could have given her, he could have rescinded the order, and as Ms. Benson argues, he could have allowed a permit with a new priority date, with a 2013 priority date.
But wasn't there an order that indicated, I think it was order number 1226, that prevents the engineer from issuing any additional rights because everything had been allocated already?
The state engineer, since that order has been entered, the state engineer has taken the position that that prevents allowing permits for new appropriation.
In other words, it essentially become a new appropriation.
This would not be regarded as a new appropriation. It would be regarded.
Where does it say that anywhere?
I'm sorry?
Where does it say that anywhere, and was that communicated? Because that seems to be the sticking point.
I'm not sure it says that in Order 1226, and that's exactly why the exhaustion doctrine is important.
Well, where
because
does it,
that
where,
argument
where,
could have been fleshed
me.
Out. I'm sorry?
Where does it say that?
Where does it say that?
This would be considered not a new appropriation.
Well, I think the statute says 533.395 says the state engineer has the authority to rescind the cancellation. I think that language, rescinding the cancellation, indicates that the legislature intended that the prior permit be reinstated, albeit with a new priority date. So I think that language, the use of the term rescinded, implies that it's not a new permit that would be precluded.
Well, and imply and in fact accomplish something are two different things.
That could be.
And there's no guarantee or no surety that that's going to happen.
Oh, That's true. There isn't a guarantee that the state engineer would apply that, but I think it's within the
state. Why isn't it futile?
Because it's within the state engineer's discretion to determine the scope of Order 1226 and to have a crack anyway at looking at the scope of NRS 533.395. And that's why the exhaustion doctrine exists, to allow, one of the reasons, to allow an administrative body to look at the governing statutes and apply its administrative discretion so that Ms. Benson could come before the court and say, look, the state engineer gagged this. He said he didn't have the authority to do this, or he did have the authority to do this.
Mr. Snyder, where in Order 1226 does it extend to the state engineer the authority to treat new appropriation or requests for vacating expired permits as not new appropriations?
I'm not sure if 1226 specifically addresses that. I think it goes to the question of whether new permits for new appropriation will be granted. And so I think it's within the state engineer's discretion to determine whether this is a permit for a new appropriation or whether rescinding a cancellation is something more along the lines of a mitigation permit, which the state engineer has also granted.
But there's no, as Justice Perigary inquires, there's no regulation, there's no record anywhere that would suggest to Ms. Benson, for example, or her counsel, that the state engineer could treat this request to cancel the termination as a existing appropriation as opposed to a new permit.
That may be true, but that doesn't mean it would be futile for her to ask. The absence of a regulation doesn't mean the answer is no. The absence of the regulation means it's worth it to have the state engineer.
Okay, so you stand before this court representing the state engineer. Is that his position? That under 1226, requests for reconsideration of a cancellation is not a new permit?
That has been the position of the state engineer.
And so where is that reflected?
I don't know that that's reflected in a particular order or a particular previous rescission. I do know that, for instance, the state engineer has recently granted a mitigation permit where a surface water right stopped flowing, and the state engineer allowed the holder of that surface water right to a groundwater permit to replace that surface right. In the teeth of 1226, because the idea is that it's not a new appropriation. It's not someone taking new water out of the ground. It's an existing right that is being either, in this case, reinstated, the cancellation is being rescinded, or in that case, an existing right that is being, to some degree, replaced.
Did you represent that position to the district court judge in this case, that approach to the interpretation to 1226?
Could I?
Did you?
We did not. We focused on the broader legal issue.
So the representation being made to this court about how the state engineer interprets 1226 is different than the way it was represented to the district court?
I don't think that issue was addressed to the district court at all.
But isn't it fair to assume that the district court believed in entering its order that 1226 would, in effect, bar any issuance of a permit to Ms. Benson, even on rescission of the cancellation?
I don't think the district court's order discusses that at all.
Counsel, was a copy of Order 1226 provided to the district court?
As I stand here, I don't know. It is a publicly available document. I'm not sure if Ms. Benson attached it to her pleading or not.
Because the copy I have in front of me today talks about that it says all applications filed after December 31st, 1978 to appropriate ground for irrigation purposes will be denied, but then it has exceptions on page 2. And sub 2 says those applications filed for diversion rate only with no corresponding increase in duty of water would fall under the exceptions provided. Following up with Justice Hardesty, that's why I inquire.
I don't know if the court had that or not.
Well, but we do.
But again, that
we
that
do,
language,
and that exception doesn't extend to what you just described.
I'm not sure the exception does, but the rule does. The rule says applications for appropriation. I don't think this is an application for an appropriation. This is a request for administrative review of a cancellation. I think that is very different than an application for a new appropriation.
Can I ask you another question? Now, 533.395.3 prevents the engineer from issuing a water permit with an original priority date other than that which is indicated in Order 12.6, which would give a priority date of 2013, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Now, isn't that in and of itself prejudicial in the sense you go from a 1960 priority date to a 2013 priority date, and doesn't that also have ramifications?
Oh, certainly. Certainly.
Absolutely.
It's definitely not as good as a 1960 priority date.
No question.
But the question isn't whether it's preferable. The question is whether it's futile. And it is not futile. If there is no, there's no curtailment order in effect right now. If Mrs. Benson had received that permit, she could be pumping water today.
We don't know that.
Yes, we do.
Depending upon
what
the allocation of the water rights have been and whether or not there's water available.
No, this is groundwater. So
okay.
It's not like a surface right that will just go away if there's not water. This is groundwater, and there's been no curtailment order. Now, it's an over-appropriated basin, and there may be in the future. It's definitely not as good, and it's definitely not a preferable remedy. But the question before the court isn't whether it's a preferable remedy. The question is whether it is no remedy, and that's the language that this court used in the.
Well, it's no remedy in the sense that she won't get the 1960 priority back.
That's true, because that is the legislative relief available. That's what the Nevada legislature said was she could ask for.
Simply put, the ability to continue pumping water, is that a regulation, what you're talking about, or was this an argument made in open court?
Her ability to continue pumping under the new
permit. Did you provide a regulation or some kind of directive that has been issued by the state engineer, or is this just an argument being made that was made in district court, but no regulation was provided?
Exactly. If the regulation would be a curtailment order. In other words, if the 2013 permit was not going to allow her to pump water. The reason we would know that is because there would be an order that, you know, the plaintiffs could have come to court with an order saying, you know, there's this.
What I'm asking is whether or not there was something that was issued by the state engineer that sets forth their policy for handling these kind of cases.
The only thing that would be set forth would be a curtailment order. In other words, if you have a permit, you're allowed to pump water unless there's an order to the contrary. So there wouldn't be something allowing it other than the permit. There would be something specifically not allowing her to pump if it was the case that she was not allowed to. I think all these questions really get to the issue of what the scope of the futility doctrine is. And I think in order to look at that, you look at what the purpose of the exhaustion doctrine is. And the idea is that exhaustion allows the state engineer to develop both a legal background to exercise his discretion to determine, you know, to state whether Order 1226 does in fact allow rescissions. We think it does, but If this had gone forward through that administrative review process, the court would have a positive declaration from the state engineer one way or another. It would allow factual issues to be developed, whether Ms. Benson does in fact fall within any sort of legislative exemption. It would have potentially allowed Mrs. Benson, something close to the relief she seeks, at least relief that would have worked on the interim. So, you know, if she did ultimately decide to pursue judicial review, she would have a permit to pump water in the meantime. And so I think in determining whether the futility exception to exhaustion should apply, I submit that the court should look to, you know, whether these purposes are being served, whether we're allowing the administrative agency to exercise its discretion, whether we're allowing it to develop facts, whether we're, you know, promoting judicial economy, all those things. And if those are not substantially being served by Ms. Benson going through the administrative review process, I think at that point you say, yes, this is futile because none of the policy objectives underlying the exhaustion doctrine are being served.
Can we decide this case based on Eagleman as it now stands, or do we need to look at other jurisprudence such as California or the federal rules reference exhaustion?
Eagleman does not give a very thorough analysis of futility. In Eagleman, the petitioner, first of all, this was in 1978. Eagleman was decided in 1981. The petition was filed in 1978. The provisions of 533.395 we're talking about were enacted in 1981. So it's a slightly different statutory framework. In Eagleman, he did not receive any notice. He did not receive actual notice of the cancellation until after his time had run. So there is no potential way he could have sought any administrative remedy. Here, Ms. Benson received actual notice before the time had run, and you know the record is uncontested on that point. So Eagleman is factually distinguished on that basis, and there's no real analysis of the scope of the futility doctrine in Eagleman. I think that the court should probably look to the California and Washington cases, which Eagleman cited for the futility doctrine. I think it's worthwhile to look at those. This court has talked about the reasons for the exhaustion doctrine more. For instance, in Malecon, that's I don't have the site in front of me now, but the court very specifically said that, you know, the exhaustion doctrine serves to allow the administrative body to develop a factual record. In Allstate v. Thorpe, this court said the exhaustion doctrine gives administrative agencies an opportunity to correct mistakes and conserve judicial resources. So I think in those mirror the language of the California Ninth Circuit or California and Washington cases that we cited. And so I think that it's not a real stretch for this court to say we mirror these cases in terms of the scope of the exhaustion doctrine, and so we're going to mirror them in terms of the scope of the application of futility.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Snyder. Any other questions about the justices? All right.
Thank you.